And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
I was in the dorm when I got word that King had been shot. And of course, that evoked all kinds of chaos. People were running around. There was a lot of screaming. There were a lot of gnashing of teeth. So a lot of unrest. Most everybody poured out of the dorms on campus. Nobody knew what to do. Everybody was mad. I can remember being extremely depressed about the fact that he had been killed, and yet at the same time, not being surprised. The fact that happened to him was just another link in the chain.
Yesterday, as you no doubt heard in the news, the Assassinations Committee of the House of Representatives began its first formal investigation hearings into the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Tomorrow there had been a couple of other committees that had made reports prior to the time that they stood up the House Select Committee on Assassinations. There had been a report based upon the Warren Commission's findings. That had to do, of course, with the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And then there was a commission that was organized in the United States Senate and was chaired by Senator Church. And it looked into some abuses by the Federal Bureau of Investigations and the infamous COINTELPRO program, counterintelligence program, wherein the FBI targeted black activists because of the fact that they saw them as being dangerous to the country's interests. So following both of those reports, there was an awful lot of conspiracy theory, both as it related to the death of Dr. King and President Kennedy. And when I say a lot, I mean a lot.
How many here believe that James Earl Ray acted alone in the killing of Martin Luther King? I'm sorry, but that's such a grim question, but it's an important one. How many believe there was a conspiracy and that he was not? Oh, my goodness.
I have profound doubt that he killed Dr. King. I am convinced that he was not involved alone.
The black community had been pushing for some time to try to get the assassination of Dr. King investigated. It was only at the point that there was so much uncertainty about the assassination of John F. Kennedy that it was possible for folks in the Congress to come to agreement that they would put together the House Select Committee on Assassination to look into both deaths. I was here in Cleveland, fat, dumb, and happy, working with my dad in the practice of law. So going to Washington to work on that committee was kind of one of the furthest things from my mind when the opportunity arose. And the opportunity arose basically because Lou Stokes became miffed because the staff director at the time was telling him that they really couldn't find any qualified African-American lawyers who had the requisite prosecutorial background to help them present the public hearings that were scheduled to take place in 1978. He knew that I had spent 2.5 years in the county prosecutor's office here in Cleveland, and he and my dad were very close. Lou called my dad and asked him whether or not I would be interested in spending about 10 months in Washington to help them do this last phase of the presentation. I was interested in just trying to see what being in Washington, D.C. would be like. And working for Congress seemed like something that I might not get another opportunity to do. And so I agreed to pick up and go. When I got there, my job primarily was to do the prep for the presentations. It was a function of just making some judgment calls, you know, based upon what I had in front of me to try to identify the things that seemed to be most crying out for answers, to try to develop a line of inquiry that would get those answers in front of the public. A lot of the files that we were dealing with came from the FBI. A lot of it was heavily redacted. We had to go back to the FBI sometimes and ask, why is this redacted, and to get them to unredact certain things. We knew that the surveillance that was conducted on black leaders, and particularly black activists, but it wasn't just limited to black activists. It was blacks who were actively engaged in the civil rights movement, but were not seen as being radical or otherwise folks who were a danger to the country. That kind of impetus that was put on trying to discredit them was something that needed to see the light of day.
Memos and strategies of the FBI to disrupt, to destroy, and I'm using words from their memos, the civil rights movement, to neutralize and destroy the character of Dr. King and so forth.
For one thing, it was a matter of great concern and interest within the African-American community. And if those questions had not been asked, if they'd been left hanging, if there wasn't some sort of clarity brought to why they were doing it and what they were trying to accomplish, then certainly the black community would not have been satisfied with the outcome. Plus, on top of that, you know, we were not really all that satisfied with the responses. And so we dug into it, especially myself and Ken McHarg and another black gentleman by the name of William Webb. We saw it as our responsibility to establish what the FBI had done and to lay the groundwork for either legislative changes or administrative changes that would make it so that that kind of conduct would not take place again. There was one project that I undertook, and that was I was asked to do a review of James Earl Ray's guilty plea. James Earl Ray, when he was first arrested, he entered a guilty plea, and very shortly after he entered the guilty plea, he recanted it. And he said that he had been forced. And there were reasons to believe that, you know, there might be something to that. The question was whether or not he knew at the time that he entered the plea that he was giving up certain rights, whether he had been coerced, whether he had been cajoled, if there was any other untoward influence that was placed upon him. And so I went through all of the paperwork about the entry of the guilty plea and the recantation of the guilty plea, and ultimately came to the conclusion that, no, he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. After you push away all the other stuff, what you end up with is the investigation of an 11-year-old homicide. So the possibilities of you being able to nail it down definitively and be able to say without any shadow of a doubt, let alone beyond a reasonable doubt, was pretty slim. As a black lawyer, I frequently felt the pressure to try to make sure that to the degree that we could, that we got it right. I can remember at the end of the committee's active life being asked to remain behind after most of the staff left to help write the final report. And that was an experience. There were days when I would arrive at 6 in the morning and not leave until 2 the next morning. I can remember sitting in my space one evening working on that, and I don't know if I was hallucinating or what was happening with me, but it just felt like for me at that point as though Dr. King was looking over my shoulder. The weight of it and the importance of what we were doing really settled on me. I'll tell you, the one thing that experience really did for me, probably more so than anything else, was it established for me what my capacity for work was. When I came back home, I was looking for things to get into. And I think it was the fact that I was looking for things to get into that ultimately led to me actually running for the judgeship. All I think that most people really want is for things to be fair. All that they ask of the government is that everybody should be looking at the same level of accountability. In this age of people asking for accountability from the criminal justice system, it only makes sense that we would have every possible opportunity being vetted for making it fair. If it's fair, then you don't have people in the street. When it's not seen as fair, when too much money seems to give you an advantage, when being of a certain group seems to give you an advantage, when being of a certain other group seems to give you cumulative disadvantages, you're gonna have unrest. I see even in my dotage my role now is to try to help younger lawyers understand that we need to make it better for the whole. Because if we make it better for the whole, necessarily we make it better for each of us individually, because we're all part of the whole. If people get active and remain active in trying to make it fair, then I think that our society benefits. And that's what we should be looking for.